You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3.
Powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. The Nissan Clearout Sales Event is on. Lease the 2019 Qashqai S for zero down from $279 a month at 3.6% APR for 64 months. Scarborough Nissan. Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Final hour for the week. Mail it in Friday, brought to you by sportsmarketplace.ca, the place to buy and sell all things sports. It's where sports fans go to put their stuff on waivers. Brian Hayes and Mike Johnson in here for the full hour. Raptors in action tonight. They're down in Orlando, taking on the Magic again. You can hear that game right here on TSN Radio. And our Raptors reporter, Josh Lewenberg, is in studio.
I'm tired of the Magic, man. I've seen enough of them over the last 2 weeks.
Three times already, right?
Yep.
How,
and like, they don't play them until the end of the season after tonight.
How much scouting goes into playing a basketball team? Like, in the NHL, like, you get like a sheet. You might get a quick little video session on what their power play looks like. How much advanced scouting does a team do before they play an opponent?
Like, normally pretty minimal during the regular season. The way they do it is they'll divide the season up into, like, segments, 5 games, 6 games, whatever it is, and then they'll give each assistant coach an opponent to prepare for a week or 2 weeks in advance. But aside from that, like, it's usually pretty minimal during the regular season, and then it's in the playoffs, obviously, right, where you lock in on a team. But that's why it's interesting you asked that question. Now it's like, I've been so impressed over these last few weeks with how specific the game plans have been going up against, especially the stars, right? Because they shut down LeBron, then they shut down Kawhi, Damian Lillard literally shut down Joel Embiid, 0 points. These are things you normally don't see into the playoffs when teams really try and zero in on like one guy, or this is what this team does. But it seems like Nurse, I'm sure we'll talk a lot about Nurse. I mean, he's an early season coach of the year front runner right now. He and his staff are really doing a great job of getting these guys prepared for each game.
Does that mean they have a smart team? Because in the NHL, you can draw up game plans, but not everyone can absorb them and then apply them, turn it around, and 12 hours later and do it in a game. Does that mean they got smart players?
I think we saw that during the playoffs, too, is that's one of the reasons why they're so great defensively. Right. I mean, obviously, they've got a lot of length and versatility in Pascal Siakam, guys that can cover OG Anunoby, guys that can cover multiple positions. But the IQ stands out more than anything else. Guys like Marc Gasol, Kyle Lowry, like, these are not the quickest players, the most athletic players, both of them now on the wrong side of 30. But they've got guys, you can throw Fred VanVleet in there, even as a young guy, that are just really smart players. So it's not just about being able to switch and having the athleticism and the versatility to guard all these players. It's like, okay, well, you've got to know, first of all, who you're playing against and what that guy is trying to do, and then how to direct traffic, specifically Marc Gasol, and the way that he directs traffic out there, the way that he is vocal and communicating and helping out the younger guys. As much as, I mean, people are he's taken some heat.
Well,
this
offensively,
year, Marc Gasol,
he's done nothing.
Yeah.
Like, offensively, he is not bringing anything to the table at any point.
But he's the 7-foot Kyle Lowry in that sense, in that you can't always measure the contribution with the numbers, because, like Lowry, so much of the value he brings is with the passing, with the defense, all those intangible things. And even though, and he's pretty hard on himself too. He's been super frustrated. We've seen it a few times where he lashes out at the refs or even himself, but the Raptors are so much better, especially this season, as a result of having Marc Gasol, than they would be without him. And I'm not sure that the casual basketball fan sees that even now, even after shutting down Joel Embiid.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt that Nurse and company, they appreciate what he brings. And his minutes, they're like, you knew he was going to be subject to kind of easing into the season. He's mid-30s now. He played more basketball in the past 12 months than he has at any point in his career.
In the world, won the
NBA
Worlds.
Finals, wins the World Cup. Late into the summer as well,
yes.
Gets into camp. They're in Japan. Like, he's
those
done a
parades
lot of travel.
Had to be pretty exhausting too.
The way he went after them, they would be.
Like, he was the captain of both parades.
He was captain of the party boats.
Right. Yeah. So you kind of it's almost like a catcher hitting early in the season. Like, he's concentrating on his pitching staff. He's concentrating on kind of easing into the season and making sure.
That's a good analogy I've never heard before.
And you always see it. The catchers, it takes them a while to get their hitting going. It feels the same way with Gasol. Like, because tactically, he's playing the way you would expect him to play. You know, defensively, help defense, ball movement at the perimeter, even in the paint, but he just isn't hitting shots.
And he's actually shooting the three ball relatively well. Last I looked, it was like high 30s, low 40s in the percentage from beyond the arc. What's really bizarre is how poorly he shot the ball inside of the arc. I mean, he was never, even in his prime, he was never a great post-up player, and obviously as he's gotten older, that aspect of his game has declined, but he's better than how he's shooting right now around the rim. I think last I checked, he was 27% from inside the arc, and that he's like a career 50% shooter from inside the arc, maybe even better than that. So there's going to be some regression there. Those numbers will climb, and you're right, at some point he'll probably get his legs under him and the offensive numbers will be better. But if there's anybody on this team that you can sort of just almost ignore the offensive numbers, the shooting numbers, the scoring, it would be Gasol, because at this point, I mean, it's pretty clear what value he brings, well, especially against in those matchups like Embiid or Vucevic.
He's got a shield. He's got two shields up. They're 13-4. So nobody's freaking out about anything right now. And they're a top 10 efficient offensive team anyway. Right, so it'd be one thing if they were struggling to score or they were losing a lot of ball games, you'd start to look at a guy who's capable of more, a guy that's getting paid a lot of money, but you don't have to. Like, it could not have been a better start, even with the injuries have been a positive, because all of a sudden Boucher's got to play and Hollis Richardson's got to play. All these guys have to play, you know, or Jefferson. And you get these guys who get Terrence Davis, who did play opening night.
Yep.
Like, he did have a good camp, and they gave him an opportunity to play. But he's getting now upwards of 24, 25 minutes a night, and he's confident. Like, we had Nick Nurse on with us yesterday, and I was watching the game a couple of nights ago. I'm like, this guy is – he took 8 three-point attempts for an undrafted rookie. Like, that is that's a green light. Like, I'll give credit to Nurse because
– Empowering him to do it.
He's empowering him to do it. He hit 3 of them. You know, it's not like he's throwing up bricks consistently. And
9 points, 8 shots. He'll take
getting aggressive. He was getting in the paint at times, too. But I'm not sure he gets this opportunity. He won't get this opportunity.
Well, wasn't that the big concern when Lowry and Ibaka were healthy? They were running like a 7-man rotation. Yep. They were struggling to find an 8th guy. Couldn't locate a 9th guy.
Yep.
And now with both those guys gone, they're running an 8 or 9-man rotation, which will make it 10 or 11 when they get back. In the NBA, losing 2 of your top 7 players can never be a positive, and somehow
it's usually a death sentence.
Yeah, they should be 6 and whatever, 11 or whatever it is, but they somehow spun it into a really positive development for their team.
And I was concerned, like most people, once Lowry and Ibaka go down. I think even if Nick and the coaching staff are being honest with you, they'd probably tell you they were concerned too, because you're right. I mean, to start the season, the plan was 8-man rotation, the 8 returning players, the guys they trusted, the 7 guys that you talked about, as well as Patrick McCaw was going to be the 8th guy. And then McCaw never really figured it out. He was battling the knee injury and then had surgery. And then Ibaka and Lowry go down, and you're left with a 5-man rotation.
Right.
So,
Lowry was playing a ton of minutes.
And he was playing great. And Ibaka was playing maybe the best basketball of his career, too. If those guys, it's so interesting, because if those guys don't get hurt, is Chris Boucher playing now? Probably not. Terrence Davis, maybe. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, probably not.
And now, they would be so much worse going forward. Like, they may have the same record. But for the course of the season, these guys getting hurt, probably the best thing that could have happened for the Raps.
Well, you can't send those 3 guys back to the bench. Like, those guys are in the rotation now. Maybe the minutes go down once everyone gets healthy. But you're playing Boucher, Hollis-Jefferson, and Terrence Davis going forward. So, yeah, I mean, I think the good news here is you can afford to pace yourself throughout the course of the season, which is something that they should have been doing anyways, but would have had a hard time doing without the depth to justify it. So now you bring Lowry's minutes down when he comes back. You need to bring Van Vliet's minutes down. Yeah. I know he's still a young guy, but man, at that size, taking the beating that he does every night and playing the minutes that he's playing.
I like his no-load management attitude, though. It's like, I need the anti-load management.
Oh, when you're undrafted, he says it all the time. Play me 48 minutes. I'll play 48 minutes. Sure, why not?
Right, he's dying for that type of vindication. I mean,
and he's looking to make some money in a few months. So, play me 48 minutes.
Did he sign with N1?
Yeah.
Because he was the unsponsored shoe guy for a while.
He's got those cooking now. I've seen those online. Now, Josh Lundberg in studio.
Boucher was the player of the year in the G League?
The MVP.
MVP and the defensive player of the league?
And defensive player of the league.
Is that generally a precursor to a good NBA career? Because like, you don't hear about, it's not like, you know, you're the best player in junior. Like, this is not a natural transition. That wasn't a guarantee that he'd become really good in the NBA, is it? What's his ceiling? What can he become?
The level of competition, the difference in the level of competition is night and day. There's such a massive disparity. The Raptors had a former G League MVP in Lorenzo Brown, and he's playing overseas now. He's a player that they like, but it's such a tough jump to make. And a guy like Boucher was so interesting, still is so interesting, I guess, because he's not even close to as young as you would think that he is. He's already been in the league for 3 years, and he was already an older rookie. Like Siakam, he picked up the game later in life. So, like, age-wise, you don't associate the older young guys with having that high of an upside. Mm-hmm. And then you just look at the body type. I mean, that, I think, was the biggest question, whether or not his game would translate in the G League.
So thin.
And in the G League, you don't have those big physical dudes that you do in the NBA. So would that aspect of his game translate? That was another big question. But there was this intriguing skill set, the quickness, the length, the versatility, the three-point shooting at that size, and what we're seeing now, which I didn't expect this. And I'll admit, I didn't watch a ton of them in the G League last year. I did not expect the offensive rebounding we're seeing now, because that, up until very recently, was the Raptors' biggest weakness as a team, rebounding in general. And they were giving a ton of offensive boards. They weren't getting very many themselves. I tweeted this stat out earlier. The Raptors, through the first 10 games, were averaging 7 offensive rebounds a game. Over the last 7, they're averaging 12. So an increase of 5 per game. And Boucher and Hollis Jefferson are responsible for 65% of the Raptors' offensive rebounds over the last 7 games. Mm-hmm. Boucher, I mean, those two guys specifically bring so much energy off the bench. And those are the perfect guys. Those are the guys you want to have coming off the bench. The guys that are going to lift that level of competition when they come in. So it's sort of like almost accidentally here, they've stumbled into this really well-suited rotation where you've got guys that,
Well, and I think it gives Nick Nurse an opportunity to keep the pressure on a couple of guys. Like, you know, when Kyle comes back, he's playing. When Serge comes back, he's playing. But OG Anunoby is not guaranteed anything. Now, I've been impressed with him. I think he's played well. But you can point to someone else and say, Terrence Davis might get your minutes.
Norman Powell
is the other guy I was about to mention.
Who
those
one,
are the two
one
guys.
Game is great, the Norman Powell of like the playoff Norman Powell, the Milwaukee Norman Powell, and then the next game, he might go scoreless.
Those are the two guys where this is a career making opportunity for them. Mm. With Leonard and Green leaving, that's them.
Right.
Like you're looking at the wing position where these guys can both get minutes and listen.
OG's still too young, though. I mean, it's an opportunity, but
Terrence Davis is a rookie, right? Like, I'm not talking about some 28-year-old grizzled vet who's like, I might. Like, the point being is, Anunoby, yes, he's young, but he's not raw. Right. Like, he has the ability, and I think he's played fine. I'm not saying I have an issue with him. Again, they're 13-4. I'm just saying, if he slips, those minutes can go somewhere else quickly. And this is not a developing team. This is not a team that's like, wow, we're 4-13.
Right.
We have more faith in Anunoby long term, so we've got to play him. Nick Nurse is going to coach to win every single night. And if Davis is that option, he's going to play.
And he's Fred VanVleet through and through, right? Terrence Davis, like literally the same story, undrafted, bet on yourself, all of that. But even just that mentality, he's the type of guy like Fred that the second you give him a sliver, just open that door a little bit and he's kicking it right open. So a guy like Norman Powell, absolutely. I think Powell way more than OG. OG, I mean, he gives you something every night on at least one end of the floor.
Yep.
And the organization really high on him. He's having a great start to the year. Norman Powell has already been sort of, I don't like using the word called out, but he's already been challenged by Nick Nurse over the last few weeks. He needs to be more consistent. He hasn't been consistent. So I think he's the guy that once everybody gets healthy, if he's not playing well and doing it consistently, then Terrence Davis is the guy that's breathing right down his neck.
Absolutely. Josh Lewenberg, our Raptors reporter in studio.
Nick Nurse seems to be the biggest star on this team right now. He's getting a lot of attention, much of it well-deserved, him and his coaching staff, I suppose. What is different about him than other coaches? What makes him unique?
Well, I think...
Other than the guitar playing.
Other than the guitar playing. He's literally a rock star.
Yeah.
well, I think for coaches mostly, I think a lot of it is right place at the right time. A lot of it obviously is having the right personnel, and I'm sure Nick will tell you that both of those things are a factor for his success. But there's a small handful of guys in the NBA, coaches, that really move the needle, that tactically, strategically, that side of things, the X's and O's, that they bring something different. They're just creative and innovative in a way that certain guys aren't, and I think Nick is one of those guys.
Is he more innovative on the offensive side of the ball or defensive?
Well, we thought offensive.
That's right, based on his role
that's
beforehand.
That's what we
as an assistant coach, he was the guy that helped the Raptors revolutionize their offense, change the way they played the year before. Ultimately, he was hired as the head coach. And when he was hired, he was known as an offensive guy, an offensive guru. But this defense right now, even in the playoffs, with some of these funky looks, the box and one and all of that, that's been the end of the floor where I think, one, he's really raising eyebrows.
Right.
And two, the Raptors have clearly made their name and built their reputation on that end of the floor. So I would say that that's probably been more impressive from Nurse. I just even off the floor, and you guys see it, you guys hear it when you talk to him, the dude is just, he's laid back.
Yep.
He's chill. It's so, sort of like, I don't want to say, I don't want to knock Dwayne Casey, who of course did such a great job here, and just because one guy is one way and the other guy is another way, there's a lot of gray area here. There's not just one way to do it. But it's funny to me that going back to when that coaching change was made, the biggest criticism that a lot of people had was, well, why are you promoting a guy from the same staff or you're firing the other guy? It's
right.
The same thing.
If he had the answers, why didn't he tell him?
Bring in a new guy. But ironically, the two coaches are so incredibly different, maybe opposite. And I think Dwayne, in a lot of ways, was really... really, what's another word for uptight? I don't want to say uptight, but high.
Well, he was intense.
He was intense, and it wasn't. And you could sort of feel that. And I think at certain points, especially in the playoffs, I think players felt that. I think it sort of made its way into the locker room, and then there was just everybody was sort of intense and
right.
Whereas I think there's a looseness. To what Nick brings, and I think the players have really picked up on that, and that's helped them.
I think behind the scenes, though,
whatever it is, Nick Nurse seems to have it. Just that kind of rapport with the way he carries himself, that he would be able to walk into a room and like own the room.
Yeah, I think he's definitely got a presence to him. I don't think there's any doubt, but I also think he probably picks his spots behind the scenes. What he shows us is one, side of Nick Nurse, and I think it's the side that you would see the majority of the time, even behind closed doors. But he's told this story publicly, like ripping into the team after game one against Orlando last year, ripping into this team about not defending, not committing. If you're going to play like that, you can't do anything. That wasn't just a laid back, jam session with the boys.
He picks his spots.
He picks his spots, and you have to at some point. Like even the hard-ass coach at some point has got to be, rosy. And the difference is it feels like the hard-ass coach usually does that when the team is losing a lot. It's like, wait a minute, now we know that's so disingenuous. You're trying to prop us up. There's no way you're happy. You're miserable all the time. Where Nick Nurse, I think, gives off a vibe like he's committed. He's got a plan. He believes in the plan. He believes in the team. That goes a long way.
And I also think he's really straightforward with the guys. Like, there's no secrets. He's very upfront. No beating around the bush. He says it as it is, and he challenges guys both privately and publicly. It's not like I said earlier. I don't look at it as calling guys out, but he's not going to sugarcoat it. If a guy isn't playing well, if he needs to play harder, if he's not doing something right,
mm-hmm. Well, and the results have to be there for them to realize why he called them out. And I think the best
you can get away with it now that you're a champion.
Absolutely.
Too.
Well, that goes a long way. But like he called out Kawhi a little bit last year.
Yep.
Like there were times last year where he said Kawhi's not bringing it, and Kawhi's got to be a little bit more selfish, a little bit more of an assassin out there. I don't remember the exact phrases he was using.
He said mid-season that he was sort of going through the motions
right.
A little bit. And yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, players respect that. There's going to be players that don't, that take it the wrong way and maybe slighted by it or upset by it. But I'm not sure those are the guys that you really want anyways. I think how players respond to stuff like that tells you a lot about them.
Right.
And you want the guy you want Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, a guy who wasn't playing at the beginning of the year, that Nurse says, okay, well, he's not acknowledging and identifying how hard you need to play, how hard we needed to play in order to win a championship. He needs to pick up on that.
Right.
he eventually did, and those are the type of guys you want. You don't want the guys that are going to hear that and say, well, I don't want to play for this guy anymore.
Well, and I think he handled that well because he didn't necessarily single out one guy. Like, originally, early in the season, he said the new guys.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I think Hollis Jefferson is clearly the guy who got the clue.
15 guys on the roster. It's not hard to figure out who the new guy is.
But, yeah, you're looking at, you know, maybe Matt Thomas.
Stanley Johnson, who might be the other end of the spectrum, who hasn't gotten it. He hasn't landed,
right? Like, he hasn't exactly. So, we'll see.
Now, will we know more after this week? Now, they have Orlando. Orlando's got a couple guys not playing tonight, so if they play a good game, they should win. But they got a pretty tough schedule coming up.
You mean the rest of the games aren't against Orlando as well?
Well, it seems that don't we wish. But don't they have Houston
really
and Miami and
really
Utah
tough.
And
Philly coming Philly. Up again, and then the Clippers will be in town in no time, so, in a couple weeks.
So in 8-9 days, maybe we'll have a greater sense of what they can do.
And it sounds like they could be getting one or both of Lowry and Ibaka back on Sunday against Utah. A good timing for that with the tough schedule coming up.
Right. How do you expect them to handle Lowry the rest of the way? Like, once he's back and at 100%, like, I don't know if he's a load management candidate, but, like, his minutes clearly have got to be scaled back. We knew that before he got injured. But at some point, if you want optimal Kyle Lowry come playoff time, and that's where you're going, you got to have a game plan for him.
Yeah, there's enough historical precedent now to know what happens when you overuse Kyle Lowry early in the season. It's happened so many times. There was like 3 or 4 years in a row where it's like, okay, he plays big minutes early in the year. He plays really well until midseason. Then he starts to wear down towards the end of the year. Then in the playoffs, he plays poorly and everyone says, well, he's not a playoff guy. Well, no, it's not that he wasn't a playoff guy. It's that he was playing through.
He got no legs anymore.
Back injuries or the elbow injury or the wrist injury. There were so many things. I mean, last year he had the thumb thing, but at least they managed his minutes to the point throughout the season where he had at least the stamina, the conditioning to fight through it. So, yeah, I think they were flying too close to the sun there early in the season. You can't play this guy 40-plus minutes, at least not at 33. So the minutes come down a little bit, and it's easier to do now that they have depth that they probably didn't even realize that they had. At the same time, as long as you're playing Lowry and Van Vliet together.
That's the thing. They don't have depth at that position.
No. So I think Nick's got to be creative with it. We got to see some of Terrence Davis at the point, and they've been really pushing that, trying to get
Siakam
more
at the
there.
Point.
Siakam.
I like that idea, man. But I would experiment with it anyway.
You've got to. But I think the idea is you want, when Lowry comes back, you want at least one of Lowry or Siakam on the floor. If not at all times, most of the time, they're trying to do that right now with Van Vliet and Siakam.
Yep.
So I don't know. I mean, Lowry's going to play a lot, and Lowry is Lowry. Lowry wants to
play
a lot.
He wants to play, but his body breaks down. I mean, that's what happens.
You got to protect him from himself. That's why this might be, we talked about the blessing in disguise of guys being hurt and other guys stepping up.
Yep.
How about the blessing in disguise of Lowry getting 2-3 weeks of rest in the middle of the season?
And for a finger. Like, it's not his knee, it's not his hip.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that's
an important
slow
point,
him down.
Because you can still kind of train, stay in shape,
yep.
But just keep it fresh. We're not trying to build it back up.
And the Raptors have had a lot of thumb injuries over the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah, they love it.
Seriously.
All right, man. Well, we'll catch you on the pre and post tonight. I think so.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
He gave you a look like you weren't sure.
Are you not a part of it?
I just came up here to hang out with you guys.
I assumed you were a part of it. Like, we got the game.
Yeah, I'm not doing that tonight.
Yeah, maybe I should have known.
Our pregame is brief because it's a 7 o'clock start, okay. But I'll be here for halftime and postgame with the great Jim Taddy.
There you go.
Yes, guy.
Josh Lewenberg and the man himself, Jim Taddy.
Thanks, guys.
Good seeing you, buddy. There's our TSN Raptors reporter. Again, Raptors in Orlando taking on the Magic. You can hear that game right here on TSN 1050. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN app. All right, Overdrive continues on TSN 1050, up on TSN 4. We have not been on TV on TSN 4 because the Leaf game has been on all afternoon. The Leafs are about to lose 6-4 to Buffalo. They were winning 2-0, had the game in control, and gave up 4 unanswered in the second period. Got it back to 4-3, then it was 5-3 Buffalo, then 5-4. And now 6-4, and Michael Hutchinson again is going to get another loss, and he's given up five goals.
Penalty shot with 9/10 of a second.
Are they actually going to allow that? That's so stupid. Hutchinson now, I hope he stops this, because if he gives up another one.
How could you say it's stupid? If you're the guy who just got hooked on a breakaway, you're looking for a goal, man.
0.9 left. It's a 2-goal game. But everyone's ready to leave.
But I'm ready to score. I'm not afraid of garbage time.
All right, so this could be 7-4 then.
Yeah, put the extra point on it.
That's a garbage call, I think, anyway. But anyway, it's...
This Absalon is going for his first goal of his career.
Here's the first loss in Sheldon Keefe's career as an NHL head coach. But the story of the game is going to be the backup again.
Yeah.
They cannot get a win from a backup goalie. They score four goals. You score four goals any given night, you should win that game.
Mm-hmm.
And... Michael Hutchinson, again, we've been on the air throughout the game, but one or two you understand. One or two you got to have. And at least one of them, if not a couple of them, he didn't look very good on.
Six starts this year has not given up less than four.
Yeah. That's you
four
can't
times
have that.
Five, or well, I guess six now. Twice four, three times five, one times six. Like, you know.
But that's on Kyle Dubas. Like this
is two parts to this. You're absolutely correct. So you can say, I mean, we can rightfully, understandably say, backup goaltending has not been good enough, and that's on the athlete, I guess. Unless you're asking him to do something he can't do. So if you're going to accept the fact that Michael Hutchinson is not an NHL goaltender, then it is not on Michael Hutchinson. If you're not good enough, it's like, can I put you on the power play in the NHL and say, why isn't Hayes scoring? Because he's not good enough.
Right. If I'm not good enough to be on there,
so if he's not good enough, that's on the general manager, absolutely. For whatever reason, they did not address their backup goaltending situation
well
properly.
The reasoning is quite simple.
Because they had a guy they wanted to do it.
No, they spent all their money on other players.
This is true as well.
Like, that is ultimately what happened. They had $700,000 for a backup. And guess what? It's not going to change tomorrow. Michael Hutchinson clearly is not an NHL goaltender. His stats would indicate that. His history would indicate that. But Kaskasuo isn't either.
Yeah.
So they have no option.
Michael Neuvirth was supposed to be the option.
Neuvirth was supposed to be.
And they were hoping for lightning in a bottle. Now, that was a bit of a crapshoot with his injury history, but
right.
At least he had shown in his life, when right,
capable,
healthy,
goalie.
He can play.
He can play. He's a legit NHL talent. He was the guy they wanted.
I think that's what they were hoping that was going to pan out.
It was.
And it didn't.
And he pulled the chute in camp, and he didn't want to play anymore, and they cut him, and they moved on from him. I made the joke a couple of weeks ago. I'd call him back. I would call him back and say, have you rethought this? Like, do you want to start playing?
Swallow my pride. Listen, are you healthy?
Right.
Do you want to come out?
Like, because they cannot continue with this backup situation. It's the worst backup in the league, and it is crushing them.
And they went with the alternate rotation, front half of a back-to-back.
Did not make a difference.
Now, you know, the team in front of them had plenty of breakdowns in this game.
Auston Matthews was a turnover machine.
He had a couple coughing it up moments.
And they're going to lose games. I mean, the Sheldon Keefe era wasn't going to be perfect. But Buffalo has really been struggling. You're up 2-0.
Yep.
You got to get that game. Or you got to get a point. You got to find a way to battle into overtime. And now tomorrow night, you're at a situation where Buffalo's probably thinking, we're playing with house money. And the pressure is, to an extent, on you, even though it's still November. But... You got
at least
those
they're not in the playoffs right now.
They're not in the playoffs. You got those three wins in a row. If you drop two in a row immediately, that means you've dropped eight of your past 11 games. And that's not much better
you
than...
You need the new coach bump, and then it's got to continue.
And then it's got to continue.
You can't go well for three games and then kind of start, you know, picking up one, losing one, dropping two, winning one.
Honestly, I looked at these two games as I thought they were going to win them. And I thought for confidence and to really, you kind of have to do what Dallas has been doing. Like, if you want to get back comfortably in.
San Jose, Dallas.
Comfortably,
yeah, you got
to
run off one or two losses in 13 or 14 games.
You got to have a huge run. Now, that's still possible if this is your only loss. You win tomorrow and you keep rolling here.
Yeah. But again, back to the point. What does Dallas have? Ben Bishop and Anton Hudobin.
They got the best tandem in the league.
Jaroslav Halak would have a conversation with them, but like, they're right there.
Right.
Absolutely
there.
Right there. And it's a big part of why they were so good last year.
Mm-hmm.
Big part of why they can go on runs like this, because you can throw Hudobin in there when Bishop is tired and you get this similar high quality goaltending.
So what are they going to do? Like, who? I assume Hutchinson is the guy. You're not going to call Kaskasuo back up. He can't play in the NHL. So what are you going
to
do?
Kaskasuo got to play against Pittsburgh.
I know that, but based on who he is in the minors, and the guy who knows him better than anyone, one of the first things he did was send him back. Sheldon Keefe knows what he's got. He knows who Kaskasuo is. He knows who Hutchinson is. He decided quickly.
Yeah,
one guy's going back, the other guy's coming up.
So you're scouring
What are you scouring for?
A $700,000 goalie, or you're trying to find free agents like Neuvirth back again? Because
you have no other option.
But what are your options? Roll forward with Hutch,
or you make a real deal,
or you trade a player out.
Like you trade an actual player with term.
You trade
money.
Kapanen out and say, you know what? He's a good player. We love his contract, but we need a goalie.
We have to have a backup because honestly, if Freddie Anderson gets injured, they're done.
Done.
Their season is over because they're holding on by a thread right now. Because of the hole they've dug themselves in, and because the backup goalie is, what is he, 0-6-1 on the season?
Yeah.
Including Cascasuo, like the backups in general, 0-6-1?
Yeah, 0-6-1.
So you've got 1 point out of a possible 14. That explains why you're on the outside looking in.
Yeah, give yourself 7 points, make them 500.
Just pick up two more wins. Yeah, no one's expecting perfection out of the backup. No one. I'm not even sure you need 500. I think that is ideal.
On a good team, you'd like it.
You should have 500, but you cannot have zero.
You can't have whatever 112 or whatever that percentage is.
It's not even.
Not even. No,
they got a point, but it's a loser
70.
Point.
Yes.
Yeah.
0.07. Yeah.
They have a zero winning percentage from the backup, and yeah, the team is not perfect. But this is not a back to back.
And I think this is something that Kyle Dubas, who generally speaking, I like what he sells. I buy into what he sells. I think he's got to wear this one. This is on
it's
him.
On him.
This is on him.
Absolutely.
And
you can talk about the style of play and all that. At some point, the goalie,
and coaching, all that stuff, all great, but.
Can the goalie make a stop? And that goalie's getting at least 13 more starts.
And as smart as Kyle is, and aware of all the latest trends in the world of hockey, the numbers have been out there for a few years now. How much better goalies are when they play 55 games versus 65 to 70?
Mm-hmm.
How much better backup goalies are in the second half of back-to-backs than even a starter going back-to-back? If you have a capable backup, the value of the backup has becoming clearer in the last several years.
Right. Which is cutting edge in a way. And
you would think Dubas would be onto that.
Yes.
And yet he's gone the other way. I don't know. He couldn't afford to go that way, even if he bought into it. So I was curious, because you play a lot of hockey. I was wondering, given the conversation that's gone around this team about the backup goalie, and apparently Sheldon Keefe talked to some of the players about, should we bring Hutch back and give him another crack at it? They said yes. Given the conversation about starting him now in the front half of back-to-back, how different it is in Babcock, in my entire career, I never once gave any kind of consideration to, like, I owe it to the goalie. Let's play well to help the goalie. I mean, the goalie's there. He's part of the team. We all want to play well for each other. But I never felt any kind of personal ownership of his situation. And I was wondering if the Leafs might feel some of that today, because they have been involved in this personal situation for Hutchinson. If they would have been somehow more locked in defensively, more careful with the puck.
Well, clearly
that was not the case.
No, that was not the case. But you got to think at some point you get a little bit jaded about your situation as well. And as much as these players, I don't know how much of a connection they have to Hutchinson. I don't know how they really feel about him. Maybe they love him. Maybe they do actually see NHL talent and ability. And he's had more than just a cup of coffee in the NHL. He has been in the NHL for an extended period of times. But I got to think at some point, the players are sitting there saying,
yeah, that's the guy who stops the puck.
It's killing me here. Like, it is killing us here because, again, the Leafs losing 6-4 this afternoon to Buffalo. Buffalo was a team that was due for a win anyway, and credit to them offensively, they broke up. You know, Jack Eichel had an unbelievable game. But the Leafs are up 2-0. They put 4 on the board total. You got to win that game.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to win that game.
Tampa's going to win today, maybe. They're up on Washington. If they win, the Leafs drop behind both Buffalo and Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who cares what the standings at this point? But it speaks to where they land. Because Tampa, you assume, is going to continue to get better.
Tampa is getting in. Boston's going to win the division.
Yes.
Tampa will be either the 2 or the 3 seed.
Yes.
I don't think there's any doubt there from my perspective. I think they'll be the 2 seed.
And then you're battling Florida Buffalo, Montreal.
Buffalo, and Toronto. And with Montreal doing what they're doing, they're probably going to have, they're going to swing upward at some point. I think they're too good.
Now, so should Toronto. If this is their bad stretch, even prior to Babcock getting fired, you'd like to think that they're good enough that this will be their worst 10-game segment of the season.
Yep.
But you're right. You sit there on the bench, and, the breakdowns are in front of Hutchinson. He lets them in, and there weren't any awful goals today, were there? Like just grotesque ones?
No.
But there's a whole bunch where I'm on the bench, and I'm like,
come on, give me that one.
I'd like him to save that.
Can you give me that one?
You know,
Jeff Skinner comes in.
He's 35 feet out with a wrister to the glove side. Skinner's got a good shot, but I'd like a save there.
Yep.
It'd be nice to mix one in there. And then you got to mix a couple, break down there. Can you bail me out?
Jimmy VC, Matthews turned the puck over a few times tonight, and he had a career high in ice time, 24 minutes and 48 seconds.
Ooh.
And he was exhausted at the end of the game.
Absolutely spent.
He's not used to that, and I'm not sure he's capable of doing
it. A McDavid-like skater.
He is a heavy skater and a heavy guy.
Yeah.
Nylander with a career high of 23 minutes and 10 seconds.
He was great the first two periods.
Nylander looked very good.
Yeah.
And Nylander is a little bit more graceful with his skating. But it's when you get it back to 4-3, I believe, at that point, Matthews with an inexcusable turnover right in the middle of the ice. That can't happen. VC's in alone, but that's
right after they cut it to 4-3 as well.
Just hit 4-3. You got to get that stop. There's 10 minutes left in the game. The building's starting to get a little bit anxious if you're a Sabre fan. Leaf fans are down there starting to get a little bit loud, thinking they're going to chip back away at this. And those are the two stories. Matthews and Nylander playing more hockey than they've ever played before, and I think that's going to continue under Keefe, and you have to play them. When Marner comes back and he's back in shape, he's going to play 22 minutes a night. Tavares, when he's in, at 100%, he's going to play over 20.
Mm-hmm.
You pay those guys 50% of your cap. You got to play the four of them a lot of minutes. But it doesn't matter how well they play if the backup goalie's going to give up four, five, or six every single time he plays.
And it's already feels like it's been a revolving door.
Right.
Hutchinson was up, and Neuver was in camp, and then Kaskiskou popped in for a second. Now Hutch is back. They got to figure it out. Because, they finished a third of the season, right? 55 games left, 27 played after today.
Yep.
28 points. Last year it took 98 to make it. Now maybe it doesn't take that many, but even for round numbers, that's 70 more points. They got 35 wins in 55 games. 35 and 20.
That's asking for a lot.
That's a lot. That almost it makes it so hard to have a losing streak.
Mm-hmm.
If you're winning 2-1, two games to every one loss, roughly. So you lose two in a row. Now you got to rhyme off four in a row just to get back on pace.
That's the whole
thing. And that's where the numbers can kind of get away from you. You're like, they're only a couple points back. It's right there, but with games in hand and all the rest of it, you start running the numbers to get to 96, to get to 98, whatever it took last year. Now maybe they luck out and it's 94 this year, but you see the challenge ahead of them.
Well, and especially if you're in the wild card race, you're bringing in a whole different division of teams.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Philly and Pittsburgh and Carolina, even the Rangers. And I think New York's going to fade by the end of the year. I don't think they're ready. But you're bringing into the picture, three or four more teams that are competing for those spots.
And this is not on the players, not on the old coach, not on the new coach. Backup goaltender.
It's on the GM.
On the GM.
We'll wrap up trivia because we need a winner here.
Yeah,
between
we do.
You and me here at Maple Leaf Trivia. And Raptors in action tonight down in Orlando as well. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine and future headlines next. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the NFL board here. I'm on Indianapolis -2.5 at home. The Jets win big in Cincinnati. And I think the Niners are going to cover the 6 at Baltimore. I think that's a close game. Throw down 20, you can score 100. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. And get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. So we've been talking about the Cowboys and their disaster yesterday. Our poll question brought to you by JerseyFactory.com. What do you think is most likely to happen with the Cowboys during the coming offseason? Not shockingly, 78% of the vote, Jason Garrett's getting fired. But what if they get in and they win a playoff game? That's the only way he survives. They still could get in and they'll have a home game because they win the division. They could survive.
Got to fire him anyways.
Okay.
Dwayne Casey style. Good, successful year.
Thanks for coming out.
We need to upgrade. Take us to the next level.
Poll question brought to you by JerseyFactory.com. Custom team uniforms and logos at prices to suit any budget. Play like a pro. Look like a pro. JerseyFactory.com. All right, Grappler, get on in here because we had some Maple Leaf trivia, which was a little bit I mean, technically it was over, and then I gave you an opportunity to get back in, and,
how was
and
it
you got
over?
Back in.
We got 10 questions. It's, at the very least, it's first to five.
I was up 4-1, I believe.
But it ended up 4-4, so it never could end until you get to five. It was a 10-question trivia run.
Yeah, but we got a couple of them wrong. Like, both of us got them wrong. But I guess you're right. Future headlines brought to you by sportsmarketplace.ca, the place to buy and sell all things sports. It's where sports fans go to put their stuff on waivers. The Grappler, you're going to be the one to answer this future headline. Who do you think is going to win trivia?
The captain.
You're on me?
I'm
the captain?
On you.
Attaboy,
Grapplers. I mean, if I say MJ, what does that do for our relationship? It's not good.
No, it's all good, man. I want you to be yourself.
You know I'm here on that. Monday, right?
He's here quite often.
Right.
See him all the time.
All right,
so do you want to explain how we're doing this here?
Yeah, so it's going to be pretty simple. So I'm just, essentially, I'm going to ask you to write down your answers.
Yeah.
You'll pass them to me, and then we'll see who the winner is. And if you should, there is kind of a bonus question, even if you tie on that, then.
All right.
Anyways, let's get into it. So,
let's figure it out.
Who led the Leafs in scoring goals during the 2014-15 season? And bonus, write, if you know who it is, write down the name, obviously, and then how many goals they scored.
14-15.
What year was Austin Matthews drafted?
16.
Okay, there's my answer.
I have no idea.
You're both wrong, so I got to ask another question.
Oh, here we go.
All right. Who led the Leafs in scoring?
We're both wrong?
What did we? I said Kessel. Who did you say?
I said Lupo.
Who was it?
JVR.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
All right. Who led the Leafs in scoring during the 15-16 season? Let's try this again.
In goals or scoring?
Goals. And write down how many. Hayes the winner. PJ Parenteau, 20 goals.
Parenteau
got it too.
Yeah, baby.
Come on.
Wow, the champ.
Remains undefeated.
P.A. Parenteau. I think he had 20.
Yeah, you got that too.
Dude, I hit both. I hit the daily double.
I gotta respect the loss.
You gotta respect the champ, man. Wow. All right, Johnny, good seeing you, buddy.
We'll do basketball trivia next week.
Yeah, that's what we should do.
Yeah.
All right, next time here, we'll do that. Grappler, great stuff, buddy. Mullen, JP, we're out of here. We're back Monday at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
And we'll chat then.
I was ready for it.
Scarborough Nissan is one of the largest volume Nissan dealers in the GTA. And they'd like to thank their customers for the continued support during the construction on Eglinton. Come on in. They're open.
The Nissan Clearout sales event is on now. Lease the 2019 Qashqai S for zero down from $279 a month at 3.6% APR for 64 months. Includes $300 bonus cash.
Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. Visit them on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Ave. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3.
Powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. The Nissan Clearout sales event is on. Lease the 2019 Qashqai S for zero down from $279 a month at 3.6% APR for 64 months. Scarborough Nissan. Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.